When we rolled out in the beginning of 2004, after Ward in 2003, the federal government had a significant amount of its expense, travel authorization, and voucher services were done on paper, or they were done internally in homegrown built systems. 100% of all of the ETS users are now online. They use a web-based capability, and they don't have to host any of that anymore. So all of the dollars and cents, the savings, the program management offices, has been really transferred out to that commercial capability. It has saved, we're estimating somewhere between $200 and $250 million have been saved. On the online travel booking side of it, where we were less than 5%, our customers, where they're fully deployed, are online booking 72% of the time. So it's a major leap. You know, the government really needs to be credited. They can move pretty quickly when tools are put in front of them that have the right return and value to them. And not to say that ETS was the perfect end-to-end solution by any means. You know, we had some usability issues to start up, but the customers have actually migrated pretty effectively on it. I think another really unheralded benefit of ETS, and I think in the financial management community, I think, finds is the integration to the financial systems are pretty much in real time. The CFOs are able to manage the auditing of this and the disbursements and reimbursements, not only on a timely basis, but, as I mentioned earlier, an auditable basis. You know, some folks in the agencies were getting reimbursed when they traveled, sometimes as far out as 28 to 30 days out. After ETS rolled out, all agencies are reimbursing in 3 to 5 days. So those are some of the real big wins. The total gross estimated savings for the life of the 10-year contract is a little over $340 million. And that's based on the business process reengineering that was done by going offline to online, transferring the costs from internal government to external commercial, and to lowering the transactions fee from calling up a travel agency and talking to a live travel agent.
There's one thing that you made a very interesting point on. You said online booking was less than 5%. Now 72% were fully deployed.
Right.
Now that's 72% at really 22 agencies or 23 of 25 agencies. But isn't my understanding, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, Justice and Commerce are pretty big users of travel, and DHS as well, in fact. I've heard they're on the slower side of deployment. Don't they account for a big chunk of that online booking? And what's the real percentage across government, across all those 25 agencies?
The number I gave you reflects Commerce's rollout as well as Justice's. I'm not sure exactly what Commerce's is, but Justice has been very successful at moving their online booking once they got the booking tool up and running. And they've been tremendously successful at it. They do a good job providing the program office with their performance, and Justice has done a great job. And DHS has done the same. You know, DHS is a very large agency. They're significant in its size and its complexity, and each one of those components have different missions. And as DHS went to roll out the capability, I credit DHS and their program office for identifying some of the uniqueness. You know, FEMA has certain issues during surge times a lot different than Coast Guard does. So I think they've moved in not only a respectful way, but also a diligent way. So I think the number that we're using is pretty much reflective of all of those agencies.
I remember looking at the most recent e-government report and said I think 23 of 24 agencies have either fully deployed or are in the process of deploying.
That is correct. All of the 24 are under contract in some form of deployment, but 23 of the 24 are pretty much fully done. If they're not fully integrated to their financial systems, then they're fully using the online booking tool and saving the money and looking at the points of sale choices through that product.
So you're going to tell me who that one outlier is?
The one outstanding agency that is not fully deployed, as there's actually two, that's Department of Justice and Department of Commerce, but both, as I said before, have been very, very active at growing their capability. I think that both of those are going to be very, very strong users of ETS too.
The other thing that's interesting was you said $340 million savings over 10 years. That's your estimate. Has that number changed? Has it increased as technology has gotten better and more commoditized?
These are the firm fixed price contracts, so the level of savings is pretty much a fixed in space under this contract terms and conditions. But I want to emphasize what the cost might have been. It could have been significantly greater. If we had inflated and continued to build our own systems, I think the number would have been much greater in savings. But in regards to the life cycle and the ROI that the government built on the business case, we could have probably saved a little more had we been able to do a big bang rollout in ETS 1 in 2004. But that's not really practical. Each of these agencies had to aggregate and consolidate their business processes, which they all did pretty darn well in a very short period of time in a couple of years. So the original cost savings was estimated to be about $450 million had we been fully deployed on day one. But with the staggered deployment, it's still hitting pretty close to what the business case was at about $345 million.
You've seen some success with eTravel. You've seen some success in terms of making changes to make it more usable, more commercial-like, what we see in our everyday lives. But one longstanding criticism of eTravel that I've heard time and again, and even the Inspector General from the General Services Administration has pointed out, is a lack of integration with the other systems such as FedRooms. Maybe things have gotten better over the last few years because I know, for instance, the IG report's a few years old now. Are things better with FedRooms? Is that being used more and more? Because my understanding was as well that FedRooms was not being used, and part of that was because people couldn't find it or was not a mandated find, I guess, through eTravel.
FedRooms was born with the principle that they would drive price down, they would use per diem as the ceiling price, and they would move out to contract with hotels and try to drive business towards that. Based on the value, based on cost, and based on having a property at the quality level where you need it to be. It's interesting when you talk about integration of FedRooms to ETS 1 versus maybe say ETS 2. FedRooms is in every booking channel that the government travelers use today. So the travel agencies can book FedRooms. You can book FedRooms on ETS, current ETS 1. It's mandated that they provide it in ETS 2, but it's not a mandatory use of a program. Let's say like our Airline City Pair program, Jason. The Airline City Pair program is mandated, and it has tremendous utilization and a tremendous following. The FedRooms program, we're thinking, is going to continue to grow and be attractive. I'll give you some interesting statistics. In 2006, we had about 500 to 600 hotels participating across the U.S. and a little bit internationally. Today, in 2010, there are 11,000 properties. In 2007, about 1% of the civilian market was utilizing FedRooms. That was about 45, 50,000 room nights in a year. In 2009, we had 486,000 room nights. And I'm very excited because I think in 2010, we're going to have almost double that. So it is growing steadily. The trends are all up. The quality of the programs and the products are up. Customer satisfaction is starting to increase. But as far as access, awareness, and visibility for a program that really is non-mandatory, is got to stand on its own merit for value and use, all the utilization numbers are going up, and the hotels are interested in participating in the program.